Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome back. Today's Daf is Shkolem Chaf Aleph. We're on the bottom of Chaf Amud Beis, three lines from the bottom. Says the Gemara, Kohen Gadol Shameis V'chulu. This takes us back to the Mishnah, where Kohen Gadol passed away and no substitute has been appointed as of yet. Who will continue bringing the Minchas Chavitin? This was a Mincha unique to a Kohen Gadol. He would bring it, he would pay for it. When he's no longer around, we still have to carry on that Mincha. Who's going to pay for it? Mishnah tells us it was actually a Tanai Bezdin. Bezdin established this practice where the Tzibur would pick up the tab, would pay for the Minchas Chavit. Says, well, we have a kash here. Rabbi Bo Bar Mamol Boi. He has the kash. Machlefa Shitzid Rab Shimon. We seem to have a reversal within the opinion of Rab Shimon. Tamon Omar, over there in the Mishnah, he said, Mishal Yarshin. Minatera, it's not the Tzibur. Tonight Bezdin is that the Tzibur pays, but Minatera would seem that the Yarshin pick up the tab, they pay for the Minchas Chavitin. And for some reason, the Bezdin decided to cast it upon the Tzibur, make them responsible for it. But Minatera, it's the Yarshin that pay. Vach Amar Mishal Tzibur. But here, Rav Shimon himself holds that Minatera, the Tzibur, is responsible. The Gemara is referring back to the last piece of yesterday's daf, where Reb Shimon said, "Eino bo el mishal tzibur shenemachok oila minat Torah." The public who has that eternal commitment to Hashem to bring that mincha, they pick up the tab, they pay for the minchas chavitin under these circumstances. So which one is it? Who's chayv minat Torah? The tzibur? As we heard from this discussion here, this brisa that we discussed at the end of yesterday's daf, or is it the Yarshin that pay mi'ikar hadin, as it sounds from the Mishnah on Amud Aleph, that it's only a Tanai Bezdin that the Tzi will pay, but mi'ikar hadin the Yarshin pay? We have a stira in Shitas Reb Shimon. Amar Abchia Barbo v'lo yosu maksha. Isn't that a good question? Asa Rabbi Yaakov Bar Acha, and he said that Rabbi Avo b'shem Rabbi Yochanan answered like this. There were several phases here. Dvar Torah hu shetehei ba minat tzibur. Really, minat Torah, Rabbi Shimon maintains tzibur pays. Chak oilam, it's a tzibur. Kiv and the chazi decham mitchaka lishka. But once they saw that the public funds are being depleted, you know, during the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, every year there was a just about every year there was a new Kohen Gadol. They were Rishayim, they were Dayan Yom Kippur when they entered the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So this is a very common phenomenon. This was a yearly, annual occurrence, and perhaps it was a long span of time that there was no Kohen Gadol reappointed as of yet. And the Tzibur just wasn't prepared for this type of expense. So the Lishka was Mitchaka, things were getting tight. And they couldn't really cover this expense. Hayisi Aimer Yikbula Mina Yarshin. They decided, okay, the Yarshin will pick up the tab. Let's apply the chiv to them. Kivin the Chazi the Pashiba. Once they saw the Yarshin weren't really too eager and weren't too meticulous in fulfilling this chiv. You know, especially the Kohanim who were doing Bayis Sheni, they weren't the greatest tzaddikim, to say the least. And the children didn't really feel committed to their father's position, which wasn't really a legitimate position. He used to buy it off from the king. So the children didn't really see themselves as responsible for their father's obligations, and they neglected to pay for it. So what did they do then? Hiskinu shteibo mitrumas alishka. Okay, so they reverted it back to trumas alishka, as is really meant to be so min hatera. And that explains our Mishnah. A Mishnah which says that it's a Tanai Bezdin that the Tzibur should pay. So everything works out. Minat Torah, Reb Shimon holds the Tzibur pays. We learn it from a Pasuk. Chak Olam, Misha Bris Krus Eloi, like we learned yesterday. It was getting difficult for the Tzibur to pay for all these expenses. They decided to put the Yarshim in charge. It didn't work out. So we went back to the Tzibur, and that's the Tanai Bezdin that's described in our Mishnah. Continues the Gemara. Okay, so we spoke about a Kohen Gadol who passed away, and somebody's going to have to bring another Minchas Chavitim, whether it's a Tzibur, whether it's a Yarshim. They'll have to keep the Minchas Chavitim going until the next Kohen Gadol is appointed. But we learned yesterday, this concept of splitting the flour, the Yisur, into two portions, that's unique to the Kohen Gadol. When he brings it in that manner. But if it's somebody other than the Kohen Gadol bringing it, no split takes place. They bring it as a full unit, a Yisurin of service. Now the question is, would you bring it twice? A Yisurin in the morning, a Yisurin in the afternoon? Or is the main thing to bring a Yisurin? So bring it once a day. Rabbi Yossi Amar, Rabbi Yochanan boy, Rabbi Yochanan had this question. Ma, what is the halacha when it's someone other than the Kohen Gadol bringing the Minchas Chavitim? Shleima b'shachris, u'shleima ben arbaim. Should we say that he brings a full Yisurin, a full portion of flour in the morning and a full portion in the afternoon as well? U'shleima b'shachris, u'beteila ben arbaim. Or do they bring a full Yisurin in the morning? And that's it. They no longer bring in the afternoon. So what's the main element here? Is it the twice a day factor? Or is it the Yisurin factor? Do we say it has to be brought twice a day regardless, so it's two Yisurinus? Or is the point to bring in a Yisurin? If you can't split it, fine. So bring it once a day and that's it. Kato, once he presented the question, Pshitalei, he concluded with clarity as follows. Yep, you have to bring it twice a day. Dechsiv, Minchas Tamid, the Pasuk describing the Minchas Chavitin, calls it Minchas Tamid. It's meant to be constant, consistent, like a carbon Tamid, one in the morning, one in the afternoon. So yeah, you bring a double recipe, one is Sir in the morning, and one in the afternoon. That's regarding the flour element of it. Now there were two additional elements here. There was the oil and the levain. So generally, Kohen Gadol will have one Yisurin of flour, three lugin, we learn it from the Tamash Ben Abayim, three lugin of oil, and a kmitza, a fistful of this levoina, this fragrant, and that was the package. He would take the Yisurin, split into two, half in the morning, half in the afternoon. Well, that won't apply in this case, as we just explained. He's going to have a full Yisurin in the morning and full in the afternoon. Regarding the oil, Kohen Gadol would generally split into two. He'd take the three lugin, split into two halves, one and a half for the morning portion, one and a half for the afternoon portion. And regarding the levaina, he would have one scoop for the morning, one scoop for the afternoon. The question is, there's no Kohen Gadol, and we're bringing it instead of him, which requires a double recipe of soilus, one isar in the morning, one isar in the afternoon. What about the oil portion? Shloishas lugin mahin. What is the halacha regarding the three lugin? Shloishas lugin shachris. Shloishas lugin ben arbaim. Shall we say that you have to bring a double portion of oil as well? Three lugin in the morning, three lugin in the afternoon. Oy lugin mechza shachris. Lugin mechza ben arbaim. Or perhaps when it comes to the oil, you may split into two. A yisurin is a unit. Now, Rav Chaim Volozhin, Nefesh HaChaim, explains how Yisurin connects to a person's nefesh. It's a tenth. A person has 10 parts of nefesh. So you can't split the Yisurin into two. Unless it's Kohen Gadol, who brings the entire thing, and then just splits it into two offerings. But when we do it instead of him, we have to bring a full unit of Yisurin. Although it requires us to bring two Yisurinus, one morning, one afternoon. Fine. But when it comes to the oil, perhaps that's not such a vital component of the Mincha. It's not on the same level as the Soilus. And that can be split into two. Take the three lug portion and split it into two. Or do we say three in the morning, three in the afternoon? Amar Rabbi Cheskia, Eifach, Eifhadah, Tzrichale. You know, you can ask the same question regarding the next element, regarding the Levina. So generally, the Kohen Gadol will bring a Kaimitz in the morning, Kaimitz in the afternoon. Shnei Kaimitz in Mayan. How do we treat these two Kaimitz when there's no Kohen Gadol around? Shnei Kaimitz in Meshachris, Ushnei Kaimitz in Abayim. Do we have to have a double shear? Two in the morning, two in the afternoon? Or one in the morning, one in the afternoon? Amar B'yosef, what are you asking about the kaimitz? Take a look at the source. How do we even know that the shiur by Levoina is a koimetz. How do you know that? From Minchas Choyte, because by Minchas Choyte, the mincha that Mitzvah brings, the pasuk says he has a does a kmitza, and that's called the askara, the remembrance. And by Levoina, we find the Torah relates it to this concept as well. Torah calls it an askara. We learn from there that a askara is meant to have a shiur of a koimetz. Klum lomdu l'koimetz loy b'minchas choyte. Haven't we learned the shiur of koimetz by Levoina from minchas choyte? Okay, let's draw a parallel. Mala halon shnei koimetzin afkan shnei koimetzin. Just as over there, certainly you can't use two koimetzin. Mincha only has one koimetz of flour. Afkan shnei koimetzin. Why would you think that over here it's any different? Why would you double the shiur? So you have to follow the source. One koimetz, no more. So one koimetz in the morning, one koimetz in the afternoon. Amar b'cheskia. So he responded, well, what about the oil? You had the same question there. And think of it. Where do we learn the shiur of Rilugin? Klum lamdu shleshes lugin loy mitamish ben abayim? Haven't we learned it from Tamid? That over there we have three lugin, so minchas chavitin also has three lugin? If that's the case, then let's draw a parallel. Mala halon shleshes lugin, afkan shleshes lugin. Just as over there, all you need is three lugin in total. Here as well, minchas chavitin only has three lugin. So why did you have a shaila regarding the oil? You wanted to know whether it's twice three or take the three and split it into two. Well, same thing you told me regarding the levoina. Let's look at the source. Same thing regarding the oil. Let's look at the source. All you need is three lugin there. Why would you even think to double the recipe? Three in the morning, three in the afternoon. Oh, apparently, it's not a real raya. Uma taman tzrichle, just as when it comes to oil. Over there, taman, you had a shaila. Although, the concept originates from Tamish ben Arbayim. That's where we learn the shear of three lugin. But perhaps when you have two separate offerings, two separate akrabis of Minchas Chavitin, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, and each one has a full yisarn, perhaps you need a full shear of three lugin per serving, per stage. So it just says over there, Tzrichle, you had a question, and you couldn't figure it out. Afkan Tzrichle, same thing regarding Levoina. Sure, the concept of a koimetz by Levoina is learned from Minchas Choyte, but we have to apply it to our case, in our context. And perhaps over here, it's like two separate minchas. One in the morning, one in the afternoon. Each one requires a full shear of two kmitzes. Okay, so let's just summarize. We learned about a kohen gadol who passed away, who takes over in the meantime. So according to Reb Shimon, min ha-Torah the tzibur would pay. It was moved over to the Yarshim when things got difficult, but then went back to the Tzibur. As the Mishnah tells us, a Tanai Bezdin was established that the Tzibur pays for it. Regarding the amount, so there are three parts. There's the Soilus, the flour, the oil, and the Levoina. Regarding the flour, we are certain that it's a fully sour in the morning and a full in the afternoon. Regarding the oil and the Levoina, we're not sure whether we take the same shear and split it into two, or it's a double recipe. Continues the Gemara, Shelo Yehei V'chu. Mishnah tells us that Bezdin made a tnai that if somebody misuses the Efer Paraduma, the ashes, there's no Me'ilah involved. Rab Shmuel Bar Nachman Moshe Abriyonison, he said, B'din Haya, Min HaTorah, really? Sheyimulubah. The halacha really is that there is Me'ilah. Min HaTorah, if one misuses the ashes of the Paraduma. Vehein gazru shelo yimaluba chacham magazer. There is no meila there. It made like a hefker, and there's no. It's not considered like you're taking anything, like you're stealing from Hekdesh. That was his opinion. That's from the Mishnah. There was a tanai bezin to suspend the meila by Efer Paradum. Says, how could you say that when a Torah meila applies by Efer Paradum? Vatani, but we learned in Hebrews, Chatos. The pasuk describes the paraduma as Chatos he. We learn from there, Melamed, Shemoyel, and Ba. If a person misuses the actual paraduma animal, there's Mila. Ba Moyalan. Only in the actual animal is there Mila. Ve'im Moyalan, Ba Ephra. But there's no me'ila applied to the Eifer Paraduma because it's already after that Krova. It's called Nasis Mitzvah. So there's no longer me'ila there. Pretty clear from the Brisa. That means Torah. Me'ila doesn't apply by Eifer. Unlike Rav Shmuel Bar Nachman said, Menat Torah, there's me'ila. Amar Avo, rather as follows. Berishayna, initially, Hayu Mishtak Shekinba. So really, Menat Torah, there's no me'ila. Problem was that people would just use it for their own benefit. They would overuse it. They would abuse it. V'noisnen oisa al gabim akesein. They would use it as a salve on their wounds. Because Eifer has this ability to heal. They would misuse the Eifer paradum. The gazer shimalbo. Therefore, Chacham decided, made a gzera, there is m'ila. M'ila m'drabban. You have to pay back the keren. You have to pay a chaymish, no carbon. But there is m'ila m'drabban. But once the Chacham saw that everyone's very careful, they're actually over careful, too careful, afraid to use it. Well, was I really tummy? Did I really need it? Because they were afraid of Me'ila. So they saw they accomplished their goal. Gazru Shlayim Aluba, now they suspended the Me'ila. As the Mishnah describes at Tnai Bezin, there's no Me'ila. This way, people will not hesitate to use the Eifer Paradum. So according to the Maskana, there is no Me'ila in HaTorah regardless. Chacham were concerned about abusing the Eifer Parah, they applied a Me'ila. When they saw that people were being extra careful, they removed the Me'ila. Concludes the Gemara of Alakinan Vachul. Now the Karban Eda says, actually this next piece of Gemara doesn't really belong here, but it's just Agav, we brought it in the beginning of the Perek. So the Gemara is going to bring it again. The Mishnah tells us that the supplier, the bird supplier to a Hegdish, would actually make up for the psulois, for the ones that weren't successful. Now, the Gemara here is actually referring back to the beginning of the Perek. We had those shefaris, those pushkas with coins. And the Mishnah tells us if you find some coins on the floor between the shefar, which contained money meant for kinin, that's the pair of birds, chatav oilapir, chatas and oilapir, between that pushka and the goizle oila, which intended strictly for oila. So if you find coins right in the middle, half and half, you don't know which way to take it. The Mishnah says you put it into the Goizli Oila because the Oila stands higher. It's completely burnt in the Mizbeach and it's a higher Kedusha than a Chatas. So that takes care of the coins. You know it belongs there because it's L'chumra. The question remains, however, what about the Isha who is relying on us to bring her a Chatas? She needs a Kapara. In this case, she never got a Chatas. Ha'isha Azois, Bamehi Mischaperes. What's she going to do? This was established as a Tanaya Masap because Akinan, the supplier of birds for Hegdish, who Masapik as a Psulis as a Oidais, he would supply birds which became possible or found to be trefa, or ones which got lost, flew away, or in this case, money, which was found smack in the middle between these two Sheforis, which required us to put into the Oila Pushka. We say, look, we're not sure really if this perhaps should have been a chatas. Send in, throw in another bird, and that's going to be brought as a chatas to account for all possibilities. And this way, the Isha certainly has her kapar. Hadron Loch, Perak Moshe Nimtzu. Continues the Mishnah, Kala Roikin HaNimtzim Yishalayim Tahirin. We know that saliva, phlegm of a zav, or of a nachri, who the Chachamim considered to be like a zav, these salivas are metame. But the halacha is that stam roik, if it's unidentified, you don't know who it came from. That depends. If it's Yerushalayim, it's tor. Generally speaking, all over in other cities, we say even stam roik is tame, the rabbanu concerned. Perhaps it originated from a person who's tame. But in Yerushalayim, they suspended that gzera. Perhaps because people were more careful in Yerushalayim with Tumah, perhaps because there was such an abundance of Kachim, they didn't want to bring about Tumah unnecessarily to Karbanis. So they suspended this Gzera, this Tumah. And therefore the Mishnah says, Kala Rukin Hanimtzim Yerushalayim Tayin. All Rukin found Yerushalayim considered to be Tar. Chutz Mishashoka Elyon Divrei Meir. Rameh holds that there's an exception to the rule. Everything is Torah except for the roik found in the upper marketplace. The Gemara will tell us there was zavim that would congregate there, and therefore over there it's presumed to be tummy. Rabbi Yosi, he adds as follows: b'sharkol yimayis hashana, throughout the year, shebe'emtza tmei, when you find an unidentified roik in the middle of the road, it's presumed to be tummy, because throughout the year, even Yerushalayim, the ones who would walk in the middle of the street were the general population, which was not presumed to be tar. So anything found there is vaday tummy. Shebet stod n'tayr, if you find some roik on the sides, on the sidewalks, then you assume it's coming from a person who's tar, because the tahirin were a miut throughout the year, and they walked on the sides. B'shas haregel, during Yom Tov, it's the other way around. Shebem tzatayr, if you find in the middle of the road it's tar, shebet stod n'tmein, on the sides it's tamir, b'nisham utin, mistalkin l'tstodin, because whoever is in the minority would walk on the side of the road. So throughout the year, the Tahirim would walk on the sides, and during Yom Tov, the Tmein would walk on the sides. That's regarding Rik. Now we have a similar concept regarding Kalim. Chacham Geizer, that Stam Kalim, a Tame. We're concerned perhaps a Tame came into contact, it belonged to Tama Aretz. But in Yushalayim, there was no din of Stam Kalim Tmein. We say Stam Kalim in Yushalayim Atar. We have some exceptions, where we actually see, we have grounds to believe that this kli is tamei. Kol ha-kelim hanimtzim Yerushalayim. All kelim, unidentified kelim found in Yerushalayim, derech yirida lebeis ha-tefilah tamein. If you find them on the way down to the mikvah, is to have two parts to the stairwell. One was the way down, one was the way up. So if you find the kli on the way down, you assume that it was dropped on the way into the mikvah, it was tamei, and it was dropped on the way in. So it's presumed to be tmei. Derech aliyah tor, if you found the kli on the way up after the tefillah, then it's presumed to be tor. Shalai kiridasan aliyasan, because the way down and the way up were two separate things, and therefore we differentiate. Divrei Rabbi Yosi Omer, he says no. Even in this case, it's considered to be tor. It's considered to be stam kelim Yerushalayim, which is tor. You don't really know with certainty that it was tamei. Perhaps a person dropped it there. Therefore, he says it's tor, except kulan torin chutz menasal. Except for the Hever Kadisha tools, sal, a basket, a magrefa, some sort of rake, vamaritza, another tool used, hamiyuchad on the kvaris, which were designated for kvaris, for the Hever Kadisha, in which case there would be no reason for them to be metired. So these kelim, even in Yerushalayim, considered to be tummy. Continues the Mishnah. Sakin shenimsis b'yidalot. Suppose you find a shechita knife on the 14th day of Nisan, it's Erev Pesach. Now, the Karban Eid explains that all agree when it comes to carbonous utensils, we say it's presumed to be Tomei because of a chumr. We want to be machmer by Kedusha of Kachem. There's another pshat based on Rashi, based on, Tois and Chagiga, who says that the next part of the Mishnah is speaking where you found the knife near the mikvah, but not on the way down, on the way up. Because Yaisa, there were alleyways near the mikvah, so you would access the mikvah using those alleyways, but you had no way to determine whether it's on the way in or the way out. But one thing you know for sure, this kli was once tummy. Why else would it be near the mikvah? So that brings us to the next halach. Sakan shenimtzis biyadalat. If you find a knife, a shechita knife, on the 14th day of Nisan, shechit b'miyad, feel free to use it for your carbon, because its owner surely was tevelit in time that it should have a potential to be used for his carbon Pesach. B'shleisha asar. However, if you find it on the 13th day of Nisan, shoyna matvel, you have to retitle it, because perhaps the owner had not yet tended to his knife. He was waiting until the end of the day, he was going to do a tefillah and have hair of shemesh. Therefore, you can't be certain that it's tohar, you have to be titled. That's regarding the shechita knife. Koifetz, which is a meat cleaver, used cut apart the animal to break the bones. B'zeh b'zeh. In this case, whether you found it on the 13th of Nisan or the 14th, shoyna umatpel, you have to be tevel it again, because he couldn't have used it. He wouldn't have prepared it for his Karban Pesach. We all know that you may not break the etzem of a Karban Pesach. So the koifetz is useless for Karban Pesach. But perhaps he wanted it for his Karban Chagiga, which would come with the Pesach, or perhaps Chagiga brought on Yom Tov. Well, in this case, it says the Gemara, you don't know with certainty that he took care of it. The Gemara in Pesachim actually discusses the situation and explains as follows, that there was a suffix that year as to whether they were going to have a chagiga on Erev Pesach. The Gemara speaks about the Nasi, who was geis, close to dying, and perhaps they were going to be tamei. We know that when they're tamei, they don't bring a chagiga with the Karban Pesach. So that was one suffix. Another suffix was, maybe he's not even going to need it. He's going to have enough meat from the Karban Pesach. He's going to have a small group. He's not going to need the Karban chagiga to supplement the meal. So there's a double suffix, in which case, perhaps he didn't take care of the koifetz, he didn't think he'll need it. So whether you found it on the 13th or the 14th, you have to be toivlet in order to use it. Chal arba osa liyis b'shabbos, but if Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbos, shechit b'miyad. He can use even the koifetz for shechita, because he certainly prepared it before Shabbos, because he needed the koifetz for at least for Yom Tov meat, and he knows he can't be toivlet on Shabbos. So since Erev Pesach is Shabbos, he certainly took care of it before Shabbos. Likewise, if he finds the koifetz on Yom Tov itself, then certainly he can use it, because it certainly was prepared well in advance for Yom Tov use. Nimtza k'shur l'sakan. Suppose the koifetz was found tied together to a knife. Harika sakan has the same halacha as a sakan. Has the same leniency as a sakan, because it's tied together. Why would he just separate it unnecessarily and be tovel the knife and not the koifetz? We assume if he was tovel the knife, the koifetz came along for the ride, and everything is okay. Continues the Gemara of Abin B'Shem Rabbi Shulman Levi. Here's a kasha. Mishnah begins with the halacha that all rukin, all saliva is found in Yerushalayim, are considered to be Torah, except for the ones found in B'Shuka Elyon. Why? Why is that different? Rabbi Abin B'Shem Shulman Levi answers like this. Katzran Shal Nochem HaYosham. There was a laundromat. There was a launderer, a goyish, a launderer, and apparently there was some goyim there. Who would congregate, and we assume, we attribute the right to the guy, and has tumah. So that's why Shuka Elyon is different. Continues the Gemara, we're going to embark on a discussion, which we actually learned already earlier in Masechet Shkalim. It's really just a chazara, all the way down to two dots. Regarding dam nevel, we know that a nevel is metami, the basar nevel is metami. What about the dam nevel? Minat Torah, there's no tumah. Dam is not basar. What about medurah bonon? According to one opinion, it's completely tar. According to the other opinion, we're going to see soon, there was a tumah applied midrabon even to dam nevela, because it could congeal and appear like basar, and there's room for confusion. There was a tumah midrabon applied to dam nevela, provided there's a shear in that dam, which is equivalent to a kezayis basar. How much is that? A revius of dam, which when it congeals, turns into a shear kezayis, and it can be confused and mixed up michlaf with basar. So we're going to have a whole sugya, many names, hold on tight, but the bottom line is, it's really one and the same question. Dam nevela, according to one opinion, Torah completely, according to the other opinion, it's tamei midrabanan, provided it had a shear of yis. Begins the Gemara, Amar b'chanina arudos, wild donkeys, hayu noichrin b'yushalayim, they would pull out the simon, they would kill them in Yerushalayim, b'yu oilu regalim, the point was to feed the king's lions. So this was used to feed their lions. Vahayu oilu regalim, now there was dam dripping, and the oilu regalim would come along, and mishtaka, they would sink into this dam, ad arku vaysein, until their knees, so knee deep in dam. The question was, are they tummy? Ubo lefnei chachamim. They presented it to the chacham, fully omrla and davar, and they didn't bother. Apparently chachamim, they didn't respond, they didn't consider this a concern. They held that dam nevela is always tar, even drabba. Says another story. Rabbi Simon b'Shem, Rabbi Shimon Levi. Master prayed the Mishal Beis Rabbi. There was a story regarding a mule in Rabbi's home, Rabbi Danasi's home, Shemesa, which died v'tiros d'meo mishum nevela, and they considered its dam tar. They did not apply tumas nevela. Now we have two ways of understanding this. Either it's completely tar, or it was tar provided it was less than a shear. Which way do we look at it? That's a shayla. Rabbi Lezer Shoyl, he asked Rabbi Simon, Ad kama, until what point would they mitire it? Meaning, it was a loaded question, meaning, is it tar for all time? Because there's no tumah, even drabanan, on dam nevela, or it's because it was less than a shear. For Le'agiva, he didn't respond. Shoyl, Rabbi Shimon Levi, so he went to the source. Rabbi Simon was the one who quoted Rabbi Shimon Levi. So Rabbi Lezer went to the source, and he asked him the same question. And he responded, Amar Lei, Adrevi is Tor, Yoisa Mekan Tomei. It was only Tor up to Ervis, but past that it's Tomei because Chacham applied a Tuma to Dam Nevela if it has a shear of Ervis, which can solidify into his eyes. Ubash Lablezer, Lablezer was quite upset that Lechazale, Rab Simon Shmuata, that Rab Simon refused to respond to him and provide him with his clarity. Okay, the Gemara doesn't explain the circumstances. Let's continue. Rab Beva Yahav Yosef, Masnia Den Uft. Rav Beva was sitting and saying over the same story regarding the dam which they were matir in the home of Rabbi. Amalei Rabbi Yitzchak bar Bisna at Kama. So he asked him the same question. Until what point were they matir? Amalei ad Ravi is tor yotzei mikan tami. Was it only tor up until Ravi? But past that, it was tami. Meaning, I'd like to know whether it was a tahara all across the board, or was it really a tumah of the rabbanon provided as a shir or bought Benny, pushed him away. He didn't respond to him properly. Amalei Rav Zrika, so Rav Zrika admonished Rav Beva. He says, "Begin da v'sholach," just because he asked you a question, not bought, but you push him away. Amalei, so he sort of answered. He was trying to excuse himself. He says, "Begin da lo yahavos daitibi." It was just because I didn't have the proper mindset. I didn't have clarity. I didn't have. I couldn't relate to his question properly. So it wasn't something personal. I just didn't have the proper frame of mind. Why? The Omer Rav Chanan, is the pasuk by Teichacha. Your life will be hanging in the balance. What does that mean? A person who has insecurity regarding parnasa concerns. It's referring to a person who doesn't have his own source of grain, doesn't have his farm. He needs to come out to the supplier. Once a year he goes and he buys his grain. And his life is in a state of uncertainty. Perhaps his supply will run out of supplies. Perhaps he won't have the ability to purchase. That's the next stage. We gripped with fear. Constantly, is describing a person who buys his grain from a supplier once in a while, once a week. He gets it from the wholesaler, and that's involves an even greater measure of insecurity. Perhaps he'll run out of some stock, etc. This is the worst case. You will have no trust, no security at all. It's referring to a person who needs to purchase from a baker. Once a day he goes to the bakery. Well, he doesn't know if they'll be closed today. They'll have bread for him. So it's a perpetual state of insecurity. And look, me, this is Rebbe speaking, I fit that bill. I purchased my bread from a paltira, and I was in a state of extreme insecurity. I didn't have the ability to respond with clarity. Okay, bottom line, what's the halacha regarding dam nevela? My kedoin, what's the halacha? Heyed Rabbi Shuv and Pesera? So the Gemara here presents a sheet of a Tana. Rabbi Shuv and Pesera testified. Al dam nevela shu tar. Dam nevela is completely tar. The Gemara assumes it means absolutely tar. Says the Gemara, but not necessarily. Tar can mean something else as well. Mao tar, tar min lahachshir. Hol etame is metame. It just means that it doesn't have the ability to be machshir l'kabel tuma. If a fruit would get wet with this from this dam nevela, it will not be enabled for tuma. We know that when produce gets wet from one of the shiva mashkin, seven primary liquids, dam is amongst them, dam shchita, which is compared to water. Then that fruit is now enabled for tumah. If a tumah touches, it becomes tumah. But this dam nevela is tar malachshir. It doesn't have the ability to be machshir something. It's not dam shchita. That's all he meant. Tar malachshir. Halo tumah is metameh. But perhaps when it comes to be metameh, yeah. Dam nevela min drabban is metameh. So you have no raya that he meant tar completely. Says, but we can't say that. Why? Taman taninan. Because we learned in the Mishnah and Machshirin. Dama sheretz metamek ipsori. Dama ve sheretz of a lizard has the same degree of tumah as the flesh. The flesh is metame with a shear of kadosha, the size of a lentil, and the dam has the same shear. And the mission continues, metame veini machshir. Yeah, the dam is metame, but it doesn't have the ability to be machshir. And the mission concludes, this is one of a kind. Ve'elanu kayotzibay, we find no other precedent for such a concept. That dam is metame, but not machshir. Apparently, dam nevela can't have that quality. Mishnah clearly says It's a one-in-a-lifetime phenomenon. Says the girl, no. When the Mishnah said that, it meant kishir to masa. What's unique about sherets is that the dam has the same shear or tumah as the basar. They're both lentil-sized. Shear kadosha applies to the sherets, the basar of the sherets, and the dam of the sherets, because it's one entity, it's one mush. Dam, the basar go together. That's unique about sherets. Whereas by nevela, there's a basar and dam. Basar and dam, it's an animal, it's different. Two separate entities. There's the flesh aspect, there's the dam element, and they have different shiurim. The basar is metamei b'kazayis, like a solid. The dam needs a shiur avias, perhaps. It's different than a sheretz. That's unique about sheretz. Aval damei metamei kibsari. But certainly you can say that even dam nevela is metamei, just like it's basar is metamei. That's not what the Mishnah was speaking about. The Mishnah was singling out sheretz regarding the fact that the dam and the basar had the same shiur tumor. If that's the case, you can very well say that dam nevela is matami, has different shear from its basa, but it is matami. And getting back to Yeshua and Pesera, although he said dam nevela is tar, perhaps all he meant tar mila hachshir. It can be machshir. It doesn't have the chashivas of dam to be machshir, a fruit to be mkabal tumah, but it is matami midrabbanon. Or Rabbi Yosi, actually it's a machlekes between two amaroyim and two tanaim. Pligi batrein amaroyim. The machlokes between two amaroyin, chad amar tamei, one maintained that dam nevela is tamei midrabbanan, of course, provided it has a shear or revis. But chad amar tamei, the other one maintained that it's tar completely. Ma'adam atomei, Rabbi Yehuda. He follows Shita Rabbi Yehuda, who is quoted in Maseches Idias, that midrabbanan besil hold dam nevela is metamei. Ma'adam atar, he's following Rabbi Shuv and Pesera. This was the mandam of the Gemara who presented Rabbi Shuv and Pesera to the effect that Rabbi Shuv holds tar completely. So that Amira follows Shuv and Pesera, there's no tumah at all by Dam Nevela. Amalei Rav Abduma de Menachusa, Rav Abduma from Menachusa told him, this is to Rabbi Yosi Vios. Right on, correct. To Rabbi Yehuda Muraina, Rabbi Yehuda was the Poisek, the Bein Nasiava, of the home of the Nasi of Rebbe. Meaning we had a story before, we have prayed that died in Rebbe's home, and the Gemara explained that they were metire the Dam, but only because it has less than a shear. Which indicates to us that in the home of Rebbe, they applied tumah to dam nevela. Now, who was the poisek in the home of Rebbe? None other than Rabbi Yehuda. So it's pretty clear that Rabbi Yehuda is the one that holds tumah. So, in conclusion, we have two shittas. We have Rabbi Yehuda who holds tumah. We have Rabbi Yeshua ben Pesera who holds completely tahar. And Rabbi Yosi maintains that there are two amoraim who also disagreed with this regarding this halacha. One paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, that's tamei if it has a shear. One holds like Rabbi Shuv Pesera, that there is no tumah at all applied to dam nevela. Continues the Gemara, kol rukin v'chul. So it's actually a repeat of the Gemara earlier, because the Mishnah says roik is always toher in Yerushalayim, except for the ones found in Shuk Elyon. Why? Loi kein Omar Rabbi Avo b'shem Rabbi Yisrael Chanina. Didn't he tell us? Like Gazru, ala Rukin, Shibishalayim. Chacham did not apply Tuma to Roik found in Yerushalayim. So why do we say Roik found in Shuk Elyon is Tuma? Ha Itmar Alei, Rabbi Avin, B'Shem Shum Alevi. Didn't we explain on that? Rabbi Avin said, name Shum Alevi, Katsran Shal Nachem HaYashem. He explains on the Elyon Mishnah. Why is it that Shuk Elyon was Tuma? Because there was this Katsran, this launderer, where there was some Goyim there. And since Kayim congregated there, we assume that the Reich originated from them and is Tami. Rabbi Yosi added, Bishar Yimais Hashana, throughout the year, Hatmein, Malach, and Shibboleth. The Tmein would walk with the flow. Shibboleth is like Shibboleth Hanar. The main current was consisted of Tmein, and therefore the Reich found middle of the road is Tami. But Tahirin, Malach, and Atzad, and Tahirin would scamper to the sides. And everything found there is attributed to them. But Tahir and Malchin Stam, suppose the Tahir would just aimlessly wander into the middle of the road. But Tmeim walking, they would say, hey, get away, get back to the side. So that was throughout the year. Bishasa Regal was the opposite. Hatahirim Malchin Shibboleth. During Yom Tov, everybody became Tahir. So the Shibboleth, the main flow of the Tahir. But Tmein Malchim Hatzan, Tmein would stand the sides. Hatmein Malchim Stam, suppose that Tmein would wander into the middle. Vatoyin, Oyimran, Proishu, Vatoyin would turn them and say, get back to the side. So this explains Rabbi Yisrael Shita throughout the year. Anything found in the middle of the road is presumed to be Tame. And during the regal, anything found in the middle of the road is presumed to be Tar. V'chala Kelim, V'chulu, Mishnah says that Kelim, which are found on the way down to the mikvah, are presumed to be Tame, even Yushalayim. How could that be? Loi Kain, Omar Abavu, B'shem Rabbi Yechanan, didn't Rabbi tell his name Rabbi Yechanan, Loi Gazru ala Kelim, Shebi Yushalayim, Chacham not apply it to Stam Kelim Yushalayim. And says the Gemara here is different. Mekiva shenim to derech yirida lebesat tefila. Since they were found where on the way down to the mikvah, nasu echiach. It's pretty clear. It's echacha that these kelim were tame. It's not stam kelim. These kelim were tame. And since they're on the way down, they're presumed to be still in a state of tumah. Rabbi Yisi says everything is Torah except for some specific items. These tools that were used by the chevra kaddish. We had the sal, the basket, the magrefa, the rake, and we had something called Hamaritza. Abashol ha'yikaira oisan tzipurin. You call this last tool tzipurin. Why? Mandam tzipurin, shayidom tzipurin. It resembled nails. I mean, it was sharp, used to break bones if necessary. Mandam hamaritza, the other one, who called it hamaritza, shamaritza, sa'evan beis ha'kvaris, was used to carry, to transport the stone over to the beis ha'kvaris. So in any case, these were tools used by Mason and are presumed to be tamar. The Mishnah concludes that if a koifetz was found and it was connected to the sakin, we assume it has the same status as a sakin. Tni, the Brisa gives us another halacha. Suppose you have a knife. Well, you know, you're fully aware of its status. It was nitbal, was not nitbal. You know exactly what's going on with that knife. And there's another knife tied to it. Here as well, we put them together as one. We assume the same halacha that applies to one applies to other as well, because the fact that it's tied together indicates that they're a pair and have the same halacha. Tni, ha-sakin k'shur lo, if a sakin is tied to the other sakin, ha-rizuka moisa, and has the same halacha as the other one. Okay, let's just start for a quick summary. We learned that generally speaking, stam roikin found are considered to be tummy. Stam kelim are considered to be tummy. What about Yerushalayim? Stam is tar. So when we speak about Roikin, it's tar except, according to our mayor, Roik found in Shuka Elyon because there were some Zavim that would congregate there. Rabbi Yisi adds, if you find the Roik in all the road throughout the year, presumed to be Tomei. That's not Stam, that's Vade. On the sides of the road, that's considered to be tar. But Bishasa Regal, in all the road, we assume it to be tar, and the sides of the road we assume to be tamei. Regarding kelim, generally we assume stam kelim and shlaim are tar, except if you find a derech yirida lebeis hatfila, or going to Rabbi Yisi, these tools, the sal, the magref, and the maritza, which are things that the chevra kaddisha would use. Regarding a knife, we discussed earlier, some say that this is a chumra applied to tools used for karbonis. Some of the different pshat was speaking that it was found near the mikvah. In any case, if you find a knife which can be used for shechita, if you find an Erev Pesach, it's presumed to be completely tar. If you find it on the 13th day of Nisan, then we don't know with certainty that it was nitbal as of yet, and therefore you have to be toilet if you want to use it tomorrow. If you find a kaifetz, which is a meat cleaver generally used to break apart bones, in either case, whether you found it on Erev Pesach or the day before, you cannot use it, because who says the owner prepared it in time for Pesach? However, if Erev Pesach happens to be Shabbos, in which case you know he prepared it beforehand in order to use it on Yom Tov, or if Erev Pesach, or if the knife, the kaifetz, was found on Yom Tov itself, in both cases you know with certainty it was prepared well in advance, and go ahead and use it for Shechit. Continues the Mishnah, Poroiches Shenitmes, Bevlad HaTumah. Suppose the Poroiches, we're speaking about the curtain, for instance, the one hanging at the entranceway of the Heichal, which was 40 amas high, 20 amas wide, it became tummy. Shenitmes bevlad tumah. Bevlad tumah is generally a term used to describe a rishon tumah or a sheni tumah. We're speaking that it's only a tumah derabbanan, because keep in mind that a rishon tumah cannot be metame a kli min haTorah. So we're speaking that it was only mekabel tumah derabbanan, like a mashkin tumah, which is metame even a kli derabbanan. So this tumah is not so stringent. Matbil and oisa befnim, you can be toivel the pareches in the Beis Hamikdash. Umachnis and oisa miyad, and immediately you bring it back to its place and you hang it up. There's no need to wait any further. Ushanitim svava tumah, but if it got tummy through a tumah de raisa, like a nevela sheretz. Now you have to take it out of the Beis Hamikdash because you cannot keep an item which is tummy in the Beis Hamikdash. Matbil and oisa bachutz. You do the tefillah outside the Beis Hamikdash. Vishoitch and oisa bachel. You spread it out. You hang it up in the chel. It was the area right outside the azores to dry up. And you leave it there until you have Erev Shemesh, nightfall. And then you can bring it back. Because when we have a tumah d'oraisa, you have to have Erev Shemesh for it to completely become tar, as opposed to a tumah d'rabbanan, which does not require that second phase of Erev Shemesh. Now, the interesting kasha, the Taklan Chantan asks, well, why is a pareches considered a kli? It's part of the structure. Why is it a kli? Why is it a kabbal tumah? So he says, because when they would travel, in the Mishkan, they would travel in Midbar, and they would fill up the pareches with kelim, so it's considered a kli, and from then on, the pareches assumed the status of a kli and can be mekabbal tumah. Continues the Mishnah, Moisa Chadosha. Suppose it was a brand new pareches, and it was pretty. Shaitchen oisa al gaga itztua. So after we toivel it, they would have to find a huge mikvah for it. And Parshim say, perhaps they use the Yamsor Shleima, which was a huge pool, which could accommodate the pareches. So afterwards they would hang it up to dry. Shaitchen oisa al gaga itztua. They would lay it out on the roof of this structure on the Harabais, Kadesh Yira Omes Malachta, so you know that the people can come observe it and see how beautiful it is. How would they make the pareches? Pareches oivya tefach. It was a tefach thick. Because the threads used were very, very thick threads. Al shivim b'shtayim nimim nereges. It was woven using 72 threads. So it had 72 rows. Al kol nima v'nima chavdal tchutin. Each one of those threads were 24 plied. The Gemara will go into it. Orka mem amma, it was 40 amas long, v'roch b'chav, and 20 amas wide. U'mishmoinim u'shtayim riboy ha'isanasis. Some explain, it's referring to the cost. 82 times 10,000, so 820 dinar is what it cost. U'shtayim oisin chalshana, they would make two a year. U'shloish meis kahanim, makbil oisa, they needed 300 kahanim to carry to the mikvah. So how do we get to a thread being 24 ply? Explains the Gemara. Because the pasuk about the pareches says that it was made of four different colors: tcheles, blue, and argam and purple, telashani red, and sheish linen. So the four different colors involved in the weaving here. And the pasuk says was mashzar masichoshev. What does that mean? Ilu amar chut. The pasuk would only say the word chut. Chut means a thread. Echad kafal shnayim, just a double ply thread. Two strands spun into a thread. If it would say shazur, I'll take it a step further, lishloisha, that would indicate triple ply. Mashzar, that's double shazur, lishisha, that indicates a six ply thread made of six strands. Okay, so the mashzar is what's used for the pareches. But you need arba mikan. Here we have four different varieties, different types, different colors. Each color had to have this mashzar thread. Ha'asim rabba gives us a total of 24 strands in this thick thread. It has to be mashzar, which is six ply. Each min has to have that, so it's six times four, giving you a very thick thread, 24 strands spun into one. So that's the opinion of the Mishnah, that it had 24 strands. We have a brayso which goes further. Tani, shleishim ashtayim, had 32 strands in each thread. Why? Ilu amachut, the pasuk would only say chut, echad kavel shnayim, would indicate a two-ply thread. Shazer means double. La arba, instead of two, it's four-ply. Marsar, double that. L'shmoina gives you eight. Fine, so marsar means eight. Now how many colors do you have? Four. Arba mekan, hatlasim v'train, 8 times 4 is 32. Tana, we have a brayso takes it a step further. Arba mishmoina, it was 48 ply. Ilu amachut, for only say chut, echad, kafal shnayim, that would indicate a double ply thread. Clear, if we say clear, that's a braid. Lishloisha. Three strands. Shazer, that's double that. Lishisha would indicate a six ply thread. Marsar, that's double. Lishnei Masa. That teaches us that the thread had 12 strands spun into one. Okay, so that's per min. Arba Mekan, you have four different varieties. Gives us a total of 48 strands in total per thread. That's what we get, a thick pareches, a tefach thick. You use such thick thread, so it ended up being quite thick. That's regarding the type of thread. How was it woven? What method was used? So the pasuk here says masei choshev, some sort of advanced, intricately designed type of weave. Now, what exactly is that? Kosev echot oimer masei roikev. We find elsewhere describing a different thing used for the Mishkan. The pasuk calls it, refers to it as masei roikev. It was embroidered. It's a more simple way of designing it. The kosev echot oimer, but over here by the pareches, the pasuk says masei choshev, some sort of weave, which appears to be more advanced, just simple embroidery. The pasuk and the Gemara explains. Masa roikim is a more simple process. Parts of echad is just one design. Masa choshev is shnei partzufos, a double design. The Gemara explains this further. We have two opinions that explain the difference between parts of echad of masa roikim and masa choshev, which means a double design. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechem, Yudana Machlekes. Chadam, I want to explain like this. Masa roikim represents a more simple method of design. Now there's a girsa here of the Mishnah Melech which goes like this. The Masa Roikim is Ari Mekan, had a lion on one side of the material, V'cholok Mekan, on the other side is just blank. That's parts of Echad, only one design on one side. That's Masa Roikim. Masa Choshev, which is more advanced, that had Shnei Partzufos, two designs, which is Ari Mekan, V'Ari Mekan, a lion on either side. That's one opinion. V'charon Amar, the other one said differently. The other one explained. He went a step further. Masei roikim means Ari Mekan of Ari Mekan, a line on either side of the material, on the other side of the parechas. So it's parts of Echad. It's seen through and through, but it's the same design you're making. Masei choshev is more advanced. Ari Mekan, Meshe Mekan. Shtei partzufos. You had a line on one side, at the same time you wove a nesher, an eagle on the other side. That was really advanced. So they would weave it in a fashion where they would produce two separate designs on either side of the material. And that's how the parechos was made. Mishnah tells us that the parechos would involve a great expense, 820,000 coins, 300 kohanim to carry it. Says the Gemara, Bisuar biznam shem shmo guzma. Sure, the parechas was heavy and expensive, but the numbers cited in the Mishnah was just meant to bring out the point. The numbers are not exact, it's just exaggeration. Taman Taninan, we find elsewhere as well in the Mishnah. Ba'amim haya leho, kishloish meiskur. Sometimes they would have a pile, a huge pile of ashes in the Mizbeach. 300 kur, a huge amount. And there as well says the Gemara, B'yosi, B'rabi bun, B'shem Shmuel, just a guzma, of course it was a large amount, but the number cited is lav dafk. The Vilna Gaon points out that the number 300 kohanim who were needed to carry the parechas is actually very precise and exact, because the perimeter of the parechas, which was 40 amos by 20, so the perimeter equaled 120 amos, right? 40, 20, 40, 20. 120 amos at the edge. Let's assume an amma is 5 tfachim, like Shitas Rabbi Yehuda. So 5 tfachim times 120 amma gives you 600 tfachim. That's why he needed 300 kohanim to carry it. Each kohen would grab with both his hands. So he has two tefachim. And we have to cover 600 tefachim all around the edges. So 300 kohanim needed to carry it to the mikvah. So the number is right on. Okay, time for a brief chazara. If the kohen is not around, who brings the mischavitin? Whether the tzibur, whether the yarshim, we have machlekes. They used to bring nisarin in the morning, nisarin in the afternoon, regarding the oil and the levina. We're not sure whether it was split into two or a double portion. Roik, Stam Roik and Shlaim is Tor, except in certain situations. Stam Kelim Ator, except in certain situations. Dam Nevela, some say it's completely Tor, some say Midrabban is a Tumah. And we learned about the Parechis. Kol Tov and Atzlacha Rabba to you.